Now, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome, welcome once again. Welcome to this very special edition. This is actually the 20th episode of the Place to Be podcast, and all 20 have featured myself and my co-host, my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Rosero, and happy 20th. Is this like when two people are dating? Oh, it's our 20th episode anniversary.
Sure. It's the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, whatever.
Not bad. 20 shows in just about under 2 months or so.
Yeah. I mean, let's see. First one started early February. So, I mean, in the span of, 8 weeks, we've cranked out 20 shows. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. The first one was February 11th.
All right. So,
just under 2 months. So
just under 2 months, 20 in our 20th episode. And boy, are we got a barn burner for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to. We're going to break in number 20 with a big-time show here, and that is because we are opening the vault.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, I think you got the keys there. I don't have them with me. But
I do.
And we're going to be reviewing the first ever Royal Rumble that occurred on January 24th, 1988. Of course, this one was not on pay-per-view. It was on the USA Network. So let's get right into things.
Yeah. Now just...
You never know the music here. I always set it up. I leave things hanging a little bit, and then you just always talk over it.
Never fails. I didn't think you were going to use that because that wasn't actually used.
But it's all I could find. I had the open, but it's just like Vince rambling on. It wasn't very.
Yeah, that's true. I wanted to get into the background of it very, very, very quickly. This obviously, as Justin mentioned, was not on pay-per-view. This show was on the USA Network because, as usual, the McMahons and the Crocketts continue to throw barbs at each other. And on this same night, and I would call this a draw, between the two companies, because both shows aren't really that great. The NWA was putting forth a pay-per-view called Bunkhouse Stampede, which was taking place, ironically, at the Nassau Coliseum in Uniondale, Long Island. So the NWA was in WWF's turf while Vince was way out in Hamilton, Ontario at the Cops Coliseum. So he was 3,000 miles away from his home base while the NWA invaded, if you will. And speaking of if you will, it was pretty much all about Dusty and a really lousy cage match concept.
And that show bombed bad.
Yeah, right? And the show was awful. It was absolutely awful.
But even like buy rate wise, right? It didn't do garbage.
No, the buy rate was bad. The attendance was, I think, less than 10,000. When you can't at least fill half the Nassau, even WrestleMania 2 got more than that. So, it was a disaster. And I don't think any WWE or NWA/WCW pay-per-view ever went east of Philadelphia again. They would go to Philadelphia a few times, not the Spectrum that was Vince's.
They only drew 6,000 to that arena.
Yeah, that's hideous, even for Nassau Coliseum standards.
Well, it holds, hang on one sec, I can tell you, 16,234 for hockey. So, figure a little bit more than that with floor seats.
Exactly, and it was an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. So, Vince decided to trump the Crocketts by doing a free show called the Royal Rumble. Now, the Rumble itself, we'll talk about in a minute, but really that match really was not the focus of the show. The focus of the show was the highly anticipated contract signing for the rematch to end all rematches. And that was, of course, the rematch from WrestleMania 3 between Hulk Hogan, the World Wrestling Federation champion, and Andre the Giant. Now, they kind of – they were away from each other for most of the summer. Andre had some surgery on his back and took some time off. Of course, then they collided again at the Survivor Series in Richfield. And Andre won the Survivor match, but Hogan, of course, stole all the thunder. So here we are again, the big contract signing for the big rematch, which was to take place on February 5th at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis.
Yes.
And the big story there was it would be on a show called The Main Event. We'll get to that show later on, which would end up being the first network primetime wrestling show in over 30 years, back in the 60s, when the old DuPont Network would have AWA shows at the Marigold Arena in Chicago.
Now tell me, what kind of programming did the DuPont Network air? I'm sure that was something you watched. I don't know if you had televisions in college when the DuPont Network was on.
It was show of shows. We had Milton Berle, and it was we had I think Bozo, Howdy Doody probably at times.
Oh, okay.
But we were mostly watching Marigold.
Kukla, Fran, and Ali. What is that? What it was?
Exactly.
My dad used to always talk about it.
Exactly. Six man tag team Asian champs in AWA.
The Orientals.
Yeah, those damn Orientals. So, but anyway, there was an undercard at this show. And it's not a lot.
No, it's quick. I mean, you know, I think I'm guessing it was a 2-hour block they had on USA.
It was. It was 8 to 10.
Yeah, and it was very similar to just like a Saturday Night's Main Event where they actually have the main happenings, the contract signing and the Rumble in the middle of the show, and then close with just a kind of unanticipated tag match that they could just eat up the rest of time with, and they actually go off the air during the match even.
Right.
So that... Yeah, so that's kind of the setting. It wasn't meant to be like, you know, I don't know if they expected the Rumble to end up being what it would be. I mean, I know, I'm sure they had, you know, some hopes for it to maybe catch on. Maybe they were going to use it even as a house show thing, you know, kind of have a catch on here and then tour around with it to try and draw. But they ended up obviously going much bigger than that, you know, the next year. So, and as we know, the Rumble was Pat Patterson's concept, correct?
Yes, it was. Pat, okay. And Pat will forever be. And from here on out until, I don't know when he stopped helping out. I'm sure he still helps the Rumble even
I
now that he's
so,
no longer with the company. So pretty much from here on all the way through to now. And of course, you know, depending when you'll be listening to this sometime in the future, as far as 2011 is when he has booked
I'm sure he's involved. I'm sure they bring him in as a consultant if he's not. Because I know there was a while ago. I know he kind of faded off and then... He kind of did a Wanu, and they kind of pushed him. I think it was like 2004, and they had that big kind of farewell ceremony for him. But I think he came back.
Yeah.
August 2004. He returned to limited capacity in May 05. He's now retired. He acts as a consultant. So, yeah.
Yeah, so he probably helps out. In terms of consult, I'm sure he helps out with the Rumble and maybe some Mania matches, depending what they need a good ending.
I'm sure they definitely talk to him when they're trying to come up with ideas.
I'm pretty sure that he was the one. Because I know that he was the one that came up with the way Benoit won in 2004 with a hanging Big Show over the top rope. I'm pretty sure that was his idea. I'm sure the 2005 ending. And you can probably tell that he probably may not have helped with that Rumble because the 2005
ending was
until
May.
A mess.
Yep.
Yeah, and that ending was a mess. So you can tell he didn't do that one. But anyway, again, the Rumble itself was just a kooky concept to kind of fill the show. The basis of the show was the Hogan-Andre contract signing.
Right. So let's set the stage.
Yep.
USA Network, Cops Coliseum. The attendance we have that we've seen is 18,000. So I don't know if that's a sellout or not. Most likely.
Probably is. And 8.2 rating.
Yes, on TV rating. So it was pretty big. You know, we've gone over the differences in ratings. Obviously, we know that, you know, ratings then aren't equitable to ratings now, but still a very good number.
Right. Yeah.
So, and Vince and Jesse on commentary. So this is the first really major pay-per-view / you know, big time event that Gorilla is not part of.
Right. But again, this is not a surprise. Gorilla was normally not the free TV play-by-play guy. Vince was usually the free TV play-by-play guy.
Well, he was doing Challenge at this point, though.
What, Gorilla?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't remember watching Challenge much as a kid. I remember.
Well, I only know from the
classics.
Yeah, no, classics.com. Yeah. The channel. He was doing, him and Bobby were doing Challenges in 87.
Right.
Early 87, so.
Yeah, and Vince and Jesse did Superstars and... I think All American was kind of a mishmash of both shows. They'd slap some crap in, and then
yeah, there was. I mean, when I started watching, by the time I got into All American in 1990, it was just Gene in the studio,
right?
And they went through various pairings in the studio. But Gorilla did Challenge, I think, right up until like 93, 90. You know, when it went off, 93, 94, because
right.
He was definitely doing it when I was watching.
Yeah, and you can also remember, based on 24/7 and classics.com, Gorilla did practically every house show.
Yes.
At least he did most of the MSG house shows, most of the Boston Garden house shows. Usually in Toronto, it would be him and his buddy Billy Red Lions, who we'd never see. We don't know who he is, but Billy Red Lions.
The only ones that he didn't usually do were Philly was usually either Dick Graham or Tron Guard, and LA, I don't think he usually did either.
No, and then the Houston ones, they get some slap-together group, Duke of Dorchester there, and Bruce Pritchard.
So we'll get into the concept and the rules of the match when we get there. Mm-hmm. So let's start off, though, with the opener, which is Rick Rude and Ricky Steamboat. You know, kind of a match, when you think about it, obviously, in the early 90s in WCW, it would be a big-time match, and, you know, a favorite of many fans. But here... you know, solid stuff. They go actually just under 20 minutes and ends up ending in a DQ. Steamboat gets the win. You know, pretty good stuff. Steamboat was kind of starting to be on his way out at this point. And it's actually surprising that they gave him a match like this and put him over a guy like Rude that, you know, they obviously had things planned for.
Right, exactly. And it was a good match. It's actually one of my favorites. The DQ was kind of lame, but whatever. That's irrelevant. Steamboat obviously shunted down the card after the whole vacation and pregnancy debacle we talked about at the in our last Vault podcast, the 87 Survivor Series. Yeah, just a good opener, kind of get the crowd fired up, kind of keep the people interested in the you know, at home. It was a good build to that what ended up being the contract signing. But this was just two solid guys. You know, Rude was a guy who. Kind of had that savage philosophy of stalling, but not that bad. You know, he worked in AWA, he worked in World Class, and Fritz was no stalling fan. He liked action in the ring. So, you know, Rude definitely carried his working boots around his career. And I was kind of impressed that they actually put him with Steamboat. This is actually a pretty good match here, and two guys that really worked well. And as you said, you know, by the time we get to, what was it, 91 and 92, they would have a couple of, well, they would have one 30-minute Iron Man. Yeah. And then Rude would end up having one with Dustin, too, which is pretty good.
The thing I was to hear, too, is funny because you think NWA going against a show, you know, all the other times NWA had been going up against WWF, they usually had the better wrestling and WWF kind of had the better presentation and show. But here, I'm not sure what else was on the Stampede show. I don't think it was anything too great, but, you know, who would have thought, you know, WWF would be the promotion that had two guys like this going at it to open the show and not, you know, this is more of an NWA kind of match.
Yes, I agree. And just a quick check. Let's see. Can I find the, here it is. The dark match. Let's put it this way. The opener of that match was Nikita Koloff, who was the world television champion, taking on Bobby Eaton to a 20-minute draw.
All right. So that might have been pretty good as well.
That might not have been bad. And then there was... Larry Zbyszko against Barry Windham for the UWF Western States Championship. This was during the time when Mid-South was actually being bought by Crockett.
It was basically their version of the Invasion from 2001, where they had 8 million belts and you couldn't keep track of who the hell was what.
Yep. And then they threw Hawk in there for a world title match with Flair.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently I've heard the match actually isn't that bad. And then the bunkhouse, this weird kooky cage thing with boots and cowbells and some shit. I don't know. It was Dusty. The guys in the match were pretty good. Dusty, Arn, the Barbarian, Tully, Ivan Koloff, Luger, Animal, and the Warlord.
Yeah,
a bunch of good heavy power guys, but the match is just a sloppy mess, and the fans didn't know who half these guys, you know, these Long Island fans don't know who half these guys are, so it was just...
Yeah, because back then, I mean, I don't know if NWA reached up there in TV. They must have had some kind of syndicated show. Well, I guess TBS.
Oh, yeah, TBS, because I was watching it. But, I mean, yeah, but New Yorkers, don't put that shit on. They didn't like the Braves, so maybe Andy Griffith, who knows. But, yeah, I think it was definitely smart for Vince to – I'm sure he noticed what the card was, and I'm sure putting up a match like Rude and Steamboat was a smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And two popular guys in terms of known by the fans, and
but nothing.
And definitely a good opener, you know, almost 20 minutes, so it's pretty good.
Just solid, nothing special, just there. All right, so then they would move on to a little special segment, and that is Dino Bravo trying to set the world weightlifting record. So Jesse goes over to the podium. You have Bravo and that useless jackass, Frenchie Martin. I guess we should talk about Frenchie Martin. He was, I think he was just a random Canadian kind of lower-end wrestler.
Yeah,
they brought
he was
him
with,
in. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, you said Canadian. I think he was with Jacques Rougeau's or his father's Montreal promotion. I'm sure he was there for a while. So.
Well, he's actually on a lot of house shows, too. He pops up randomly before and after this run. He pops up. But, yeah, Johnny V was phased out in the end of 87. The New Dream Team broke up, Bravo and Valentine. They kind of turned Bravo back into being like a heavy Canadian guy, that he kind of got away from when he's with the Dream Team. And they bring in Frenchie here to kind of add to that. So
yeah, I remember Frenchie. Oh, Jesus, God. Watching the prime times on 24/7 from 87. I think him and fucking Outback Jack wrestled every week for about 7 months. it was absolutely. And we're not talking superstars 3.5 minutes. We're talking house show fucking 14 minutes. Yeah, it was death. Yeah. So now, of course, the big, obviously, and this is great because, you know, Gorilla and Jesse would barb over this for the next 2.5 years or whatever, that Jesse, who is spotting Dino Bravo, clearly, and obviously it's clearly because they're heels, mm-hmm. lifts the bar on the last. I think he needed to do seven reps.
Yeah.
I think it was.
To win 615 pounds.
Yeah. And he had to do, I think, 7 reps to set the record. And clearly Jesse pulled up the last 2 for him.
Yeah. And he basically did it. I mean, the joke was he's always like, you know, it was too pinky of pressure. And, you know, it would end up definitely. It was one of those things just like, you know, Greg Valentine takes 20 minutes to warm up and, every, you know, all the other things they talk about every time the guy wrestled. And the Bravo thing would definitely be talked about like the next 3 years consistently every time he was on.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It was funny. But it was good. It was a typical time killer. Ate up like 10 or 11 minutes.
Yeah, they tease it. They play with the crowd a little bit and then he does it. So
yeah, so.
All right, so then we move on to a title match. And that is a match that stems from Survivor Series when the Jumping Bomb Angels pinned the Glamour Girls during that match. And they earned the title match here. So this was a best-of-3 match for the titles. The Glamour Girls kind of won them in one of those fictitious tournaments. They said they won them in Egypt, like, back in 85. So they've had them since then.
Don't you love how they pick these random, weird, you know, Pat won the Intercontinental title in fucking Rio and Egypt.
I know, random.
In Egypt?
Well, that was the big women's international tag tournament. It was in Egypt.
That's right.
So, they had it there, and then they carry that feud over to here, so... this is actually the final appearance of both of these teams. After this, the Glamour Girls would win them back in the summer, and then they just kind of disappear. Sort of the Bomb Angels and the Tag Titles would never come back again. So, good match here, though. Best of 3 falls. The Glamour Girls win the first one, and then the Bomb Angels pick up the last 2. 15 minutes. Just a really fun, and I thought this was even just as good as the opener.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we rip on Judy Martin and Leilani Kai because I think they were on the DuPont Network too, but...
I think they founded the DuPont Network.
Yeah, but, you know, they held their own, you know, and the Jumping Bomb Angels didn't slow down, that's for sure. It was a well-paced match. They definitely, you know, worked in some good stuff, and the announcing helped. Jesse can make a women's tag match interesting.
Yes.
So made him and Gorilla so great. Although I guess if Bobby was doing it, he probably would be just as hilarious. You know, maybe call her Fred Yamazaki. I don't know, but it all depends on how the tempo is, but and the tone. But it, you know, it was a great match, and the crowd really got into it. Vince knew what he was doing here. He knew that he was going up against a clusterfuck pay per view that NWA was doing. So just be solid. Just put in your best guys, your best working boots, and just go with it. And I think that's what made it. You know, that's what made it such a kind of a memorable show, was because I don't think it was anticipating that the matches would be any good, and they really were. And this is a prime example. This is kind of one I was getting a little upset at Mr. Riche when we were talking about them. He was like ripping the Jumping Bomb Angels, probably because he's, you know, 8. But, really they brought a good something to the screen for those 2 or 3 months. And it's a shame that Vince didn't keep it. But, you know, the product was evolving and he really didn't need them. But.
Yeah, because even the women's singles division would kind of taper off. Sherry was on top at this point, but and she was a good champion. But by the time we get to 89, things really fall apart.
Right.
So we'll see as we get there. So up next now, we do have the inaugural Royal Rumble. In this edition, there were only 20 entrants. And the thing is, 2 guys start. Every 2 minutes, someone else came in. Just battle royal rules, you get thrown out, you're eliminated, last man standing. So the first 2 here, actually a very good start, and that is Tito Santana of Strikeforce and Bret Hart of the Hart Foundation. So those are the first 2 guys to come out and start the match. So I thought they picked 2 good candidates to get things going for this match.
Yeah, and it worked because they were both feuding for the tag belts. Strikeforce had beaten the Hart Foundation just a couple months before, so they were still kind of feuding over the gold, so it worked here. And why pick 2, but, you know, again, 2 better guys, and Bret would be picked for the early Rumble spots a few times over the next 4 or 5 years. And, Tito's Tito, you know, throw him in there and get it done. So, you could have put him in the match with, Rude and stuck Steamboat here. I mean, that's the one good thing. Vince still had these serviceable guys that could just give you anything you need him to. And
now the thing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, go ahead.
The thing that kind of bothered me throughout this is I actually listened to this one recently, leading up to this year's Rumble. I kind of went on a little kick and was listening at work to all the matches, and the commentary here, you know, they're really pushing away from the Everyman from itself. That's something they wouldn't really kick in until next year, in 89. Here, it was a lot of like, oh, you know, like Butch Reed enters third, and, you know, they were saying, you know, oh, Butch Reed is going to help Bret Hart, you know, and the Neidhart came in. You know, it was this very face-heel divide. Like, anytime someone came in, they would say, oh, they're going to help this guy. And they wrestled it that way, and the commentator was heavily, you know, skewed that way.
Yeah, it was kind of like the way that eventually NWA would do War Games. It's kind of the same concept, back and forth. But yeah, you're dealing with, you have a good core of veterans. This is one thing about Vince's roster at this time. They may not have been the best work rate guys, but at least they knew the business and they knew what to do. And, you know, Tito
there
and
are
Brett.
A couple of guys. We'll get there. We'll talk about it after we get through the match. But there are like four major guys that I thought, you know, should have been on the show or in this match. That weren't. So we'll talk about that though once we get through, you know, the entrance and the winner. So third was Butch Reed, fourth was Jim Neidhart. So the Hart Foundation was in there together. Reed and the Harts would take out Tito. Tito was like kind of hanging until Jake came in. So but Tito would Tito did hang on. I kind of misremembered that. So he hung on for a little bit. And Butch Reed would actually be the first guy eliminated of the first ever Rumble. So he was the first one out. And then after that, we had Harley Race, Jim Brunzel, Sam Houston, Danny Davis. So you can kind of see the guys that they had pegged for this thing, kind of a few upper mid-card guys and then a bunch of lower mid-card guys.
Right, exactly. Boris Zukov, your pal there. And
and then after Boris, they had that whole spat where Nikolai and Don Morocco came out together at 11, and they got into a little fight, and then in the aisle, and the referees had to come out. So I think they were trying to just put the concept over as like something new for the talent.
Exactly. And then at 13, my pal, my favorite guy in the whole universe, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, perfect thing for him to be in. And then Outlaw Ron Bass at 14. And then the other half of the Killer Bees, B. Brian Blair, BBB, at 15. Hillbilly Jim came in at 16. Tino Bravo, look at that, double duty. How about that? Double duty at this show. He broke the record and then went in the Rumble.
Yes, he had a very busy night.
Very busy night, Adolfo. And then... you know what's going to happen eventually? Daryl there, Daryl LaRue, is going to make another open. He's going to put that in there. So
yes. We don't want it in the opening because it's going to get played at least like twice an episode. So,
I don't mind it this time since it does, you know, he is kind of prevalent here. But and then your pal there, the one man gang, although you wouldn't like this incarnation of Mr. George Gray.
I didn't mind him at all. But just one little thing we'll mention here. You mentioned Warrior, and then right around there is when Bret Hart got tossed out by Morocco, and Hart actually set the first longevity record for 25-42. So he was the first guy in the books for having the longest time in.
Yes.
And it's funny, a little bit of an inauspicious debut for the Warrior. Should we talk about him here, or do you want to wait till four?
Why don't we do it now? Because we'll have less time at WrestleMania 4.
That's
so.
True. All right. So he was a former chiropractor, got into wrestling, started. I know, funny.
So you said that so matter of fact. So, you know, he had an office in Queens.
He trained with Sting, with Rick Bassman out in California. Mm-hmm. He teamed them up as the Blade Runners. Warrior was actually named Rock. And I think Sting was the Sting, right, at that point. Or do you have something else? You might have had a different name, Flash,
I think,
or something.
Yeah, something else. You know what? It might be Flash. Let me let's double check here.
All right. So, and then they had some decent success out in the UWF. Warrior after that went down to World Class, where he changed his name to the Dingo Warrior. And that's where he basically morphed into the character that we would know as the Ultimate Warrior, the face paint and just the tassels and running around like crazy. He was a prototypical Vince guy during that time, so of course he was brought in 87. He debuted as Dingo Warrior throughout all of, for 4 months in 87, throughout the summer on house shows facing random jobbers. And then they repackaged him as Ultimate Warrior, and that's when he started appearing on TV and just kind of built up into what we would see. So here he's still kind of just the new guy on the block, but definitely had the presence you knew was going to be something.
Right. You are correct. He was just Sting.
Okay.
And Ultimate Warrior was Rock. Originally, they were when Rick Bassman first worked with them and put them in the... in UWF, they were actually the Freedom Fighters. Hellwig was Justice, and Borden was Flash. So you were right about Flash.
Okay, yeah, I knew Flash was in there somewhere.
Yep. So they were Justice and Flash, and then they would eventually become the Blade Runners, and it was Rock, and Warrior was Rock, which is funny, and Sting was Sting. So.
Okay. So then, so 19 was All Man Gang, and the last guy in was Junkyard Dog, who by this point was definitely on his last legs. He would stick around through the rest of the year, but he was just pretty much mid card fodder at this point.
Yeah, he was pretty bloated, and I thought he was going to win this thing, to be honest with you, because these are the kind of things that guys like Junkyard Dog win.
Yes,
but. You know.
So it would come down to him. Obviously, no, he would get eliminated. The last four would be Morocco, Duggan. And we talked about Morocco's face during a Survivor Series, so he is the face here. Him and Duggan are the two faces, and Bravo and Gang were the last two heels left. So big push for Bravo in the show. Does the weightlifting thing, then he hits the final four here. Morocco gets tossed thanks to jackass Frenchie Martin getting on the ropes and kind of distracting him. And then they went to kind of double-team Duggan. But Bravo accidentally got knocked out by Gang, and then Duggan tosses Gang out, and Jim Duggan was your first ever Royal Rumble winner.
Ugh. Well, at least he won one. The... God, at least he won one that didn't have anything at the end of it. He could have won a trophy or a ham or something.
Yes, and I'm going to reiterate it, because I already got some more conversions from our last podcast, and that was... From Andrew Reich, actually, was plugging the Hacksaw J. Duggan Twitter feed. After listening to our show last night, he was plugging it on the blog. So I'm going to say it again. If you have Twitter, you have to follow Hacksaw J. Duggan. He's tremendous.
I wonder if he was in that. I wonder what his comments would be if he was in that.
I could ask him. He'll probably respond.
Tremendous. Oh, God. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Duggan was a guy Vince was banking on as his happy-go-lucky, you know, babyface, never win a title, but not needed kind of thing. And that's fine. And he won it. One Man Gang got knocked, you know, it was one of the original ways to win a Rumble, which was kind of pull the bottom rope and fall out, which is essentially what One Man Gang did. So, yeah, it was an interesting concept. I kind of enjoyed, you know, the way the match was going, the way the flow was. It was a cool concept, and I'm glad that they realized that it's something they could have hung on, and it was a neat gimmick, and, you know, they were able to make something out of it, and it ended up being, of course, a lot of people's favorite pay-per-view. Some people like this pay-per-view more than they like WrestleMania. So I enjoyed it. It was a good – little did they realize that a throwaway time killer to a contract signing would end up becoming a staple of, you know, the backbone of WWE programming.
Yes.
Pretty impressive. So there you go. There's that. And the Rumble is complete. Duggan wins.
No, I mean, you know, a fine match. I think the crowd, it seemed like maybe they were a little confused, but definitely into it. But, you know, it was fine for what it was. Nothing like the Rumbles we would come to know later on. But fine. You know, fine for what it was. Good debut. Right. So coming out of that now is what you mentioned was the big part of the show. And that is the contract signing for the WrestleMania 3 rematch. And that is Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. Now, a lot had actually changed with Andre, because he had a new, I don't say manager, but kind of a new running buddy.
Yes. Go ahead, sign it! Sign it! Why are you hesitating? What are you waiting for? Are you having second thoughts on it? Are you thinking maybe you should have accepted that generous offer I made? What are you hesitating?
And that is Ted DiBiase. Now, Ted DiBiase was a big-time star in Mid-South. He started... down there, and he actually had a little bit of a short run with WWF in I think 1980, maybe he was up and around, or 1979. He was actually the first North American champion, first one, and that would eventually become kind of morph into the Intercontinental title. He was actually Hogan's first opponent in 1979 for Hogan's first Madison Square Garden match.
Yes, and that match is actually on, I believe it's the Hulk Still Rules DVD. That came out when he made his return in 2002. So if you ever want to watch that match, and DiBiase looks so different than the DiBiase we all know.
And he was a son of both his parents, yeah, Mike and his mom as well, Helen, also were wrestlers. So they trained, you know, he obviously fell in love with wrestling through them. Then he was part of that famed West Texas State University football team that many wrestlers came from. From there, he trained under the Funks, and then he worked Mid-South, pretty much Mid-South and NWA right through 87. He was talking with the NWA. He was going to jump over there when they acquired UWF. But Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson got a hold of him and told him that they had a good idea for him for a gimmick. But they refused to tell him what it was because it was such a good gimmick. They didn't want him to, you know, hear what it was and then not come. So they told DiBiase that if Vince McMahon himself were ever going to wrestle, this is the gimmick he'd want to give himself. So, you know, he heard that, figured it was worth the chance. He signed the contract and they gave him this $1 million man gimmick. So he came in, started running many vignettes. He had Virgil was his bodyguard and, you know, just wore studded suits, you know, finely groomed, rode in limos, you know, paid his way through different things and all these initial vignettes.
I love the vignette where he paid the guy to kick the kids out of the public swimming pool. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then wouldn't even go in the pool. That was even better.
And then, of course, Virgil, the name of that was kind of a shot at Dusty Rhodes. His real name's Virgil Runnels. So that was kind of the joke.
And then, of course, the irony was when Virgil would go to WCW and join the NWO, they would call him Vincent.
Right. So,
that was your swing there. But, yeah, clearly when you see these vignettes and then you saw him on TV, particularly here, you knew the guy was special. You knew he was a special character. You knew DiBiase enveloped it with open arms, and it was just great. And he always wore black, but he always had the white tuxedo or the white outfit.
Well, of course, silver. It was more silver than white.
Yeah, it was silver
and purple. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he would have no. It was a separate white one.
Oh, you're right.
I used to use a picture on our old.
Yeah, that was later though. That was like 92.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, the white one was later. The one he mainly wore in 87, 88 was that silver and purple. Then by like 89, 90s when he started busting out the black one.
Yep. And then he would have the occasional green.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if he ever actually had that. That was like the figure had that. I don't know. I don't know if that was ever real.
We'll have to look up pictures.
Yeah, maybe he had it once or twice. Maybe like in 90, I think.
Yeah. But anyway, this was so special. And adding him, putting him in this just made it even better. It would have been fine if it was just Andre or Hogan or if Bobby was there or whatever, but DiBiase even amped it up even more, getting in Hogan's face and, like you played that clip, you know, sign it, what are you scared of?
So before that, but leading up to that, after he did the vignettes, he'd also do some great stuff in the arena where he'd bring fans up and, you know, ask them to bounce the ball 15 times and then on the 14th time he kicked the ball away and, you know, just stuff like that.
One of the skits involved a very young Rob Van Dam.
Now, was that confirmed? Because I always thought that was one of those things that was a okay. So definitely
nope,
was.
It's on. It's on the one of. It's on his one of a kind DVD.
Okay. Which one was he though? The one he wasn't the one that kissed his feet. Was that him?
Yeah, that was one that kissed his feet. It was the only two I remember was the one the kid who kissed his feet, and then there was the little black kid who
did the ball,
the basketball. Yeah.
So,
but no, it's on his one of a kind DVD. It was definitely him.
All right, so in late 87, he came out on Superstar, said he was planning to buy, he was going to make an offer to Hulk Hogan to buy the championship. Hogan had that famous promo where he came out and pretended he was going to do it, hung his head, and then, you know, said hell no or whatever.
Right.
You know, they wrestled a little bit on house shows around the circuit, Hogan beat him, so DiBiase got frustrated and asked Andre if he would, you know, come to him, you know, he would purchase Andre's contract for Bobby Heenan, and he was going to use Andre to take the title from Hogan and then have Andre hand it over to him. So that was his plan, you know, all along. And I remember the kind of joke is that Bobby ended up making a big profit off DiBiase for Andre. I think he sold him for like $10,000 and then bought, or he sold Andre for $100,000 and bought it back for $10,000 later in the year or something. It was something crazy like that. He made some weird profit.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
So here, yes, was the contract signing for the rematch that Andre never got from WrestleMania 3. They built it up all throughout 87. Survivor Series, he gets the win. And then the match, like you said, is going to be on the February 5th, 88 main event. So here they signed the contract.
Yes. And then obviously you had to have some type of chicanery somewhere in here. So after they do it, Andre pushes this. This wasn't like the old school folding table that would be the tables of lore. It would be like an actual table.
Mm-hmm.
And Andre pushed it on top of Hogan. And, you know, I think they stomped him or something and then they left the ring. So there you go. And let me tell you something. It was pretty pumped. I don't think anyone expected a rematch. And the hype I remember going into this was just as big as WrestleMania 3. Cause you're wondering, you know, is Andre going to get his back here? You know, what's going on? I mean, it's on Friday night, prime time, network television. I mean, this is a big deal. It was a big deal. And, it was good, to have them kind of be a part for this whole stretch. And we were talking about it on our last podcast about Rock and Cena, and hopefully maybe they can kind of mimic this a little bit. Andre was gone. You know, he had surgery. Hogan obviously was still on TV, and you didn't see him much on TV. He wasn't shown on primetime a lot. You had the occasional Superstars promo. You'd have the occasional house show clips. But for the most part, neither of them were on much throughout the summer. They focused on Savage, focused on a lot of mid-card feuds, that goddamn Patera nonsense. They ate the summer, believe it or not, thank God SummerSlam eventually was created, because that, I think, the most unwatchable programming, except for Bobby and Gorilla themselves, were those prime times from like April to October. I mean, they were just brutal, because all they talked about was Blackjack Mulligan, Outback Jack, and Ken fucking Patera. I mean, it was brutal. All these guys who were never around, wasn't at that WrestleMania, and they ate up like the entire summer, and every pay-per-view, every primetime had these guys on. So it really was special to finally see Andre and Hogan back, and then the Survivor Series, and finally this build. And again, not to bring another topic up, but just to kind of mirror it, we talked about Rock and Cena. I'd like to think that maybe they'll do something similar to like this, because this worked out perfectly. Yeah. Not seeing the two of them on TV for 7 or 8 months, it worked perfectly.
Yeah, it'll you know, be a little tougher nowadays with the TV, but
obviously, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that once we do another one of those shows. But here, they signed the contract. The stage is set. So what we're going to do is actually finish up. There's not much left of the Rumble. We're going to finish that up. And then we are actually going to talk about the main event here on this show as well. So we'll take care of that tonight, too. And then so that way for our next review, we'll be able to start right with WrestleMania 4. And you guys will be all caught up. So coming out of the contract signing now, they were just trying to fill the remainder of TV time. They went ahead and had a best of three match between the Islanders and the Young Stallions. And the Young Stallions won the first fall. Haku won the second fall for his team in 14 minutes. And then I think they just went off the air midway through the match. So nothing special there. Just the basic, what you would expect.
How often do you ever see two out of three fall matches in one show?
Yeah, and I doubt many people were sticking around watching at this point anyway, so.
No, I think that, yeah, I think, and I even think people in the arena, depending, although who knows what the order of that show was. I mean, for all we know, in the arena, right. I don't know if they were totally live or if this was earlier in the day, because they may have chopped this up and the contract signing might have been last. The Rumble might have been last. So they might have chopped this stuff up quick and fired it off onto USA.
Well, since it took place, I think it was the same day. So I don't think
it was the same day, but I don't know if it was live at 8 o'clock. Or if this show was like it.
Well, according to Wiki, the contract signing was actually after the women's match before the Rumble. So I don't know if that's right or not. But I'm not sure. But actually, you know, I wanted to circle back quick. And just four guys that I was kind of surprised weren't on this show. One was Rick Martel. You had Tito on here. But you didn't have the co-champion with him. The other guy is Bam Bam Bigelow, who just came off that great Survivor Series showing. And it seemed poised for a pretty big run. He's not here anywhere. You know, you think they could have stuck him in the Rumble match instead of Danny Davis or Sam Houston. Also, the Honky Tonk Man, the Intercontinental Champion, nowhere to be found in the show. Even if he wasn't in the Rumble, you think, you know, you could either maybe, you know, maybe you take out that last match and have him just have a kind of a semi-squash to put him over. And the other guy is Randy Savage, who was involved in the big feud with Honky. He was the big new face, and, you know, obviously we know kind of what was planned for him coming up, and I can't believe he's not on the show at all either. Now, I understand maybe they don't want these guys to get eliminated in the Rumble, but you think they'd at least have an interview or, you know, some kind of segment.
I get Bigelow, not that I can understand, the one that shocks me the most is Savage. I mean, because he was essentially almost up the ladder anyway. Bigelow, yeah, and Martel, I would have figured they'd throw Martel in the Rumble, but not him not on didn't totally shock me, but the one that shocks me the most is Savage. Mm-hmm. I can't believe they didn't have him on in any capacity, even throw another match on there, maybe have him and have some kind of tag or something, I don't know. I mean, it was weird not seeing him on camera at all.
And now Bigelow eventually hurt his knee. I don't know if it was before or after the show. He would continue to perform and would, you know, make it to WrestleMania. So he might have already been hurt at this point. Maybe that's why he's not here. But I know that's what ended up leading to him leaving. So,
right. So, but, so there you have it. I mean, it's not, anything special, for you younger fans. You were expecting something big and fancy schmancy, but not really. It was a pretty basic little show, simply put to get, the Hogan Andre contract signing in.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of decent undercard matches, and that was it. That was your first, you know, the show that we now, and we've seen through the rest of the 80s and into the Attitude Era when the Rumble was such a big deal. And it was just a simple, you know, for you younger fans that may not know this, the Royal Rumble was just a throwaway gimmick to fill a show for a contract signing. That's in essence what it was. And yes. look what it's turned into. So God bless you, Pat Patterson. I salute you because you put on, you may have saved, I don't want to say you saved the WWF, but you ended up making, and let's be honest, if you ask a lot of people, my brother's one of them, you ask a lot of people what their favorite pay-per-view is, a lot of people tell you the Rumble, not WrestleMania. My favorite, SummerSlam. But a lot of people like the Rumble more than WrestleMania. I think you do, right? Don't you like the Rumble more?
Them both. I mean, obviously WrestleMania is WrestleMania, but I am a big Rumble fan. I definitely love that show.
Well, plus the Rumble always had the element of surprise, which is always very special.
Yeah, it's the Rumble it's so different. You know, WrestleMania, the pageantry is great and the idea is great, but in the end, it's still just matches like every other show. The Rumble is kind of that one thing that was always very different.
Mm. Yeah, and actually having eventually there'd be a stipulation put on it, and we'll talk about that when we get to those to 93, I guess. But so overall, maybe this show actually is. I thought it was a draw between this and Bunkhouse Stampede, but I think even this blows Bunkhouse Stampede away, to be honest with you. The undercard might be a little better. Sure, there was a world title match at Bunkhouse Stampede, but mm-hmm. I mean,
I haven't seen Bunkhouse Stampede. Maybe once I've seen it, but not in a long time. So, you know, we should be getting there eventually if we ever pick the pace up on our, you know, I do want to apologize to the fans of our reviews. I mean, I think we have enough of the catalog to keep you busy. And we really want to focus right now on these podcasts because we think this is kind of maybe where our future is. But we really want to hone these and make these good for you guys. So our reviews, written reviews, are probably going to take a little bit of a hit. But we will, you know, try our best to keep them going at a good pace. So
yes, no, we appreciate everyone's patience. We have the best fan base in the world when it comes to the Blog of Doom and our friends on the board. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, I wish we can get paid to do this. I think it'd be the best thing and then not have to worry about anything else and just write reviews and talk about these matches. The greatest thing in the
world. Maybe if we did this 10 years ago, we would have had a shot when everyone was getting paid for writing every rinky-dink column when WrestleLine was out there paying all those guys like Scott Keith and Rick Skye were all getting salaries for actually just reviewing shit. So I think we came around 10 years too late, unfortunately.
Yeah, and we're better than all them anyway. Oh, I didn't say that out loud, but anyway, no, that's all right. Actually, I haven't read something from the Rick in a while.
No,
the Rick, by the way, is the guy. He, for those that don't know, Rick is the guy who heads Online Onslaught.
I used to like his stuff, but then he started getting a little too snarky and jaded. Like he was a little bit all along, like that was kind of a shtick and it was entertaining. But around like 2005, 2006, when Randy Orton, he really had a thing for Randy Orton, so he hated him. And when he started to ascend, that's when Rick kind of really started to get a little more mean-spirited.
Right.
So that's kind of when I lost interest in some of his stuff. But
yeah, well, I was not a big Orton fan in 2006 either, but I didn't hate him.
I think it was actually even before that. It was like 2004, 2005, like when Orton was, everyone kind of liked him. Like he just didn't. And then whenever Orton kind of had a shitty match, like he'd really talk it up, like he knew the truth. I don't know. It was just weird. It was just kind of a weird.
Right.
Vibe.
No, I agree. But overall, I mean, I thought this was a draw, but not really. I think the show might be better than Bunkhouse Stampede, to be honest.
And it's a little tighter, I think. And well, we'll see once we get there. We'll see how I go with it. But the big thing now, similar to, as we'll always talk about, is Survivor Series 91 Tuesday in Texas thing. This is kind of the same feel you get from this show, just kind of pumping up the main event, which would take place 2 weeks later. And really, in their eyes, that was probably a bigger show anyway, because it was on NBC in primetime compared to this. So 2 weeks later, it aired live February 5th, 1988, from Market Square Arena in Indianapolis. Now, the reason it was live, and we'll get to that in a second, is because of a major, major angle that's coming up, and they did not want that to be taped.
Right.
So we're kind of, before we came on the air, we were talking about the dark matches, kind of funny. We'll run through those quick on the show. And that Demolition took on the tremendous team of Billy Jerk Haynes and Ken Patera. Ron Bass defeated the superstar of all superstars, Coco Beware. British Bulldogs defeated the Islanders. Jim Duggan defeated One Man Gang in a rematch of the final two standing from the Rumble. And Ultimate Warrior defeated Sika of the former Wild Samoans. So those were the dark matches. The main event itself started off with a match between Macho Man and the Honky Tonk Man for a singles match for the IC title. Savage would win that by countout. And that kind of puts the bow on that feud that had been kind of going on since the fall. Savage ends up moving on to something different. Now, we'll get into all the various rumors and stories at WrestleMania, but
what a mess.
You know, according to one, this feud was set to continue. According to another, there was a very big different things planned.
Right. And the other tag, in fact, all three matches that were on television were all title matches. All three major belts were on the line. The other match, Strike Force, the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, took on the former champs, the Hart Foundation, and Strike Force beat them clean.
Well, yes, but we don't know how or have seen it because it actually went off. The show went off the air as that match was going on.
Yeah. So
now, was this show an hour or two? Because the main events were usually an hour, I think. And Saturday night's main event was two. So this might have only been an hour.
This might have only been an hour. Yeah.
Obviously if you look at the time, Savage is only 8 minutes, and then the Hogan Andre match is only nine. So, and then you factor all the stuff that happens after Hogan Andre, but.
Right.
I'm guessing it was an hour.
That's yeah, it was probably an hour. I would agree with you. It was probably an hour. Let me think. It doesn't say underneath. It does says the live broadcast remains the most watched wrestling program. Well, how about this? This live broadcast remains the most watched wrestling program in American television history. A 15.2 rating, which is crazy, and 33 million viewers.
And I think that goes to say that I think that's kind of our proof now that the the Rumble was maybe more successful than Buckhouse Stampede, because that was a big impetus into this.
Right.
And also just the fact the Hogan Andre, you know, that was such an anticipated rematch that you knew it was going to do a strong, strong rating.
Yep. And then and as mentioned, the Strike Force Hart Foundation match was in progress when it went off the air. So,
okay. So let's get into the match. So DiBiase comes out with Andre the Giant.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan comes out, and Dave Hebner was the referee. So that's the stage. They have the match. Not the best match ever. Worse than the WrestleMania match. And not just because the crowd was different. It's just much worse. I think Andre, at this point, a year later, is even more hobbled after the back surgery.
Yes.
He takes Hogan over as we, you know, wind down. He takes Hogan over with that little underhook suplex thing he would do.
It's like his one major work rate by that point.
Yes, that was like the one thing he could do. Falls on Hogan. Referee starts counting. Like pretty much after the one count, Hogan clearly gets his shoulder up. But the ref keeps counting, counts three, and Andre is awarded the WWF Heavyweight Championship. Now everyone's freaking out. Hogan can't believe what happened. You know, he's freaking out, saying he held his shoulder up.
Nobody could.
Right. The referee hands Andre the title, and then this ensued. Of course, what happened there was, if you couldn't understand Andre's thick accent, he surrendered the title to DiBiase, who had paid Andre to do so. You know, DiBiase puts a belt on, he's got this great grin on his face, and it's just really good dick heel moment.
Yeah, and I got to be honest with you. I remember watching this in my living room, my father, my brother, we made a big deal out of it. It was really cool, and you didn't know what to say. 4 years. 4 years, you never saw this guy lose, and he just lost. Yeah, he got screwed, but he actually lost. And the segment as you played kept going and going and going, and you're like, okay, when's it going to be reversed? Hogan's going to pose. He has the belt. It's not happening. He actually isn't champion anymore. And even my brother, who wanted so hard to just take the entire bowl of popcorn and throw it in my face because he hated Hogan, even he couldn't believe it. He never actually thought that Hogan would ever lose. And my dad, who was he was definitely drinking the red and yellow Kool-Aid as much as I was, really was sitting there like, did this really happen? Even my dad. I mean, it really was huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was huge. Hulk Hogan lost. You just don't believe it. It was amazing. It was a great television moment. It really was.
And now crazy. Heading into... Andre, they put the belt on DiBiase, they start to leave. Hogan grabs Dave Hebner and starts kind of shaking him around. And then a twin of Dave Hebner comes running out. And, of course, we would know the truth is that it was his twin brother. Actually, it was Dave that comes running out, and the referee was his twin brother, Earl, who had been part of the NWA as a referee prior to this. So now you got the two Hebners staring at each other, Hogan staring at them. No one knows what the hell's going on. Hogan picks up Earl, heaves him down onto Andre and DiBiase, and then that's kind of how things ended there. You know, so the title would end up being vacated by Jack Tunney, saying you can't buy the title, you can't be handed the title. What everyone ended up saying, well, as the storyline was that DiBiase paid off somebody else to get plastic surgery to look like Dave so he could do this. They never actually ended up saying it was the twin in storyline, right?
No, they did say that it was somebody was paid off. Yeah.
Right. So that was a cool little angle. Made DiBiase look even more sinister that he'd go to these lengths. He'd make some guy change his face to help him win the championship. But
yeah.
It was definitely a big shocking storyline. I mean, no one, you know, it never leaked out. No one really knew what was going to happen. It was live, so it caught everyone off guard, and it was good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you're dealing with great characters and great guys who can put stuff over. You know, I mean, DBI, it was a very, you know, it's a delicate storyline to have Hogan lose and to have all these guys just put it over. And, you know, kudos to Andre, who just was so, that might have been the peak of his heelness was this little stretch here, because he was just so slimy. Mm-hmm. You never thought Andre would stoop to this level, you know?
Right.
Because, like I said, all through 1987, as we talked about at WrestleMania 3 and at the Survivor Series podcasts, we always, you know, Gorilla treated Andre as still being a good guy who was brainwashed.
Right.
Now, there's no doubt. Andre is a bad guy.
Yes.
He stole the belt and sold it. This is a guy who was like the fabric of professional wrestling for 20 years, and he sold the world title like just a cheap, you know, thief. And it was just, it was great. It was great. I mean, it just, all these guys just did it perfectly. And you really sat there. And this is where being kayfabe is missed, because now you're like, some asshole backstage put this together, har, har, har. But back then you're like,
right.
Holy shit. I mean, it's a big deal. It was crazy. I can't implore enough to our listeners what a big deal it was to actually watch that and go, holy shit, Hulk Hogan lost. Like, you think to yourself, you know, Stone Cold's lost matches, Rock lost matches, you know, Brett and all these guys, Shawn, these guys have all lost matches. But back then, man, let me tell you something. That was crazy. You know, Hogan just didn't lose. Count out, DQ, didn't matter. He just never lost. I mean, I hate to implore that. It sounds simple, but it really wasn't.
Right.
He never lost.
No, the worst that would happen would be he'd either lose by count out or, you know, win by a DQ or count out. Right. That was really the worst thing that happened to him.
Yeah.
You know, Survivor Series was probably his biggest loss to this point.
Right. But this was just, my brother, again, even he was speechless, and he was deep inside. I know he was doing the happy dance. He was doing the jig. But even he, you're like, I never really thought he'd actually lose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And kudos to everybody. Vince, Jesse. Jesse was like having a party. But to DiBiase, to even Earl and Dave. I mean, everybody just played their roles to the hilt. It was great. Great television. Well put together.
Yeah, so now let's do this as well, since we still have some time to kill a little bit. So let's talk about, let's set up WrestleMania 4, because I think when we get to WrestleMania 4, there's so much going on at that show that it's going to be a lengthy show. So
yeah, we need to dive in. Yeah.
Let's kind of set the stage. Let's talk about, you know, where they would go with the title and also some of the rumors that are going around at the time. And then you guys can just kind of use this as the bridge to 4. So they ended up stripping DiBiase of the title, saying you can't buy it.
Yeah.
And instead of awarding it back to Hogan, though, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say very quickly, before that happened, there are some very rare, and you mentioned it in a couple podcasts ago.
Yes.
DiBiase was able to move around the house show circuit with the belt. So if you did go to a house show in that week in February of 1988 and you were able to catch DiBiase and you have a picture, you have a very rare picture, my friend.
Yeah, send it to us.
Yeah, send it to us. Post it on the post it on our Place to Be podcast Facebook page. If you have a picture of DiBiase with the world title, post it, because it is very rare.
Aired was last month, was the Hall of Fame candidate was Ted DiBiase on 24/7. And they had a match from Boston Garden during this week, and it was Hogan and Bigelow against DiBiase and Andre, and DiBiase had the title belt on. So it was pretty cool to see him, you know, walking around. It looked good around his suit.
Hmm. How did quickly, on a just very, very quick side note, how did Bigelow and Hogan look as a team? Did it look like they could have really had a nice,
I think he could have been together, one of Hogan's, you know, running buddies. The only thing is they were so diverse looking. Bigelow just had such a unique look. It's kind of hard to see him be like just a guy's buddy. You know what I mean?
Mm, true.
So no, he was more made out, I think, to be that upper mid-card heel that he would be his second time around. I think that was more his role, maybe. Although I think he could have been a big face at this point. He just kind of ran into some bad timing.
Yeah.
So, yep, they stripped the title. They put it up. They don't give it back to Hogan. Tunney announces they're going to have a 14-man single elimination tournament for WrestleMania, which, now, I wasn't watching at this point, but I'm guessing that was pretty big news.
It was huge.
That they were going to do a whole WrestleMania just for this tournament for the title. 14-man, that meant two guys were going to get a bye, of course, and that would be Hogan and Andre. They received the bye, and they would face each other in the second round. So now you're guaranteeing that these guys won't meet in the finals, and one of them is going to be out early. And the other one would, you know, be able to move on the tracking for the title.
Right. And obviously, we didn't know who the guy we didn't know who the other 12 guys were going to be. They would slowly leak them as the you know, as the weeks progressed. And I remember my brother and I were getting very excited because we learned, and as we all know now, 22 years later, tournaments solve all problems when it comes to storylines. Nothing beats a good tournament.
Nope, and especially one like this where you're just loading it up with all your major stars.
Exactly, and the ultimate prize at the end. So I remember getting very excited about a tournament. It was pretty cool. Now, obviously, they would lay the show out with other guys and other matches. I mean, you had a tag title match. Obviously, Honky would defend the IC title. So you had other matches that would be set up for WrestleMania 4. But it was interesting to see if you know, who the other guys would be, because at the time, Savage was still kind of feuding with Honky, so you weren't sure what he was going
to
do.
And there were rumors, too, that, you know, we don't want to kind of spoil the end. I'm sure everyone and the mother knows, but, you know, we kind of like to read through these as they're happening. So,
right.
But there were a lot of rumors that, yes, you know, Honky was supposed to lose the IC title finally back to Savage at that show, and he balked and things changed. So we'll get into who was supposed to win that tournament, according to rumor, and who ends up winning it. We'll kind of save that for the review at WrestleMania 4. But that was kind of the story. It was that Honky, his run would finally end at Mania at the hands of Savage.
Right. But he pulled the first, I don't know about the first, because there's probably been plenty in the territory wars but back in the day. But he pulled the first public, I'm taking my ball and going home thing to Vince. But we'll get more into that at WrestleMania 4. But yeah, he got himself get out of jail free card, but boy, did he pay for it later on down the line.
Yes.
But yeah, so yeah, there was no question. I remember Justin and buying the magazines. My brother was my brother actually, he had PWI. He would actually get the PWI subscription. I used to throw in like a dollar or so with my paper route, but he used to buy the PWI and, you know, reading the articles and, you know, who's going to be in the tournament and watch the shows. It was fun. It was really fun. And I was actually pretty pissed because I wanted Hogan to just get it back. Like we all wanted, it's funny. We all just wanted the sense of normalcy.
Right.
In our lives in 1980, you know, in the 80s, being a wrestling fan, your sense of normalcy was Hogan is the champ. We don't mind guys tag titles changing and the IC title changing. When it came to the big belt, it was Hogan's to have. And when watching that and Hogan was there, I remember the skit. And Hogan was there, and everyone thought he was supposed to get it back. And then Jack Tunney kind of pulled the rug out from under him and said, no, we really aren't going to give it back to you. And I was floored. I'm like, well, what are they going to do then? And then the tournament. And it was crazy. And the build was fun. And you're wondering who was going to be in it. And we'll tell you, obviously, when we get to the next we open the vault again. And they put a great amount of guys in there. Now, the matches themselves, as we get to them, you know, could have been better, but obviously we'll get to that when we talk about them. But the guys they put in were definitely they definitely stacked the tournament with
yeah, they didn't leave
able players.
Yeah, they definitely didn't leave too many guys out.
No. So there's your trail. And obviously we'd have a, you know, Strikeforce were still the tag champs and Honky was still the IC champ. You had this burgeoning character, the Ultimate Warrior, just kind of bubbling to the surface. And you had guys like Rude and you had Jake and the roster was pretty stacked. Mm-hmm. And it would make for a really fun tournament in terms of the guys. We'll let you know when we open the vault again whether they executed it well. But yeah, I mean, that main event might go down as one of the most incredible television programs in wrestling history. And obviously, as we just read to you, 33 million people and a 15.2 rating. And even now, in today's TV standards,
yes, that's still ridiculous.
Was still pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. So. Yeah, definitely a big time, big time angle. One of the first real major angles, you know, in a while that they had shot, really since probably, you know, the Piper's Pits leading up to 3. You know, just seeing Hogan, like you said, finally lose. And then just something new. You know, this was finally trying to mix things up. And, of course, the real reason was because Hogan was going to be off filming No Holds Barred, correct?
Yes. Yeah, he'd be gone for most of 88. So, although none of us knew that because, you know, that wouldn't be on, you know, we still the kayfabe days. You didn't read things like, right. Hogan's off to make a movie. And you're like, what? What do you mean making a movie? He's the champion. None of this movie-making nonsense. You know, like you didn't think that kind of thing. But
I actually remember the WWF magazine coverings. My brother collected them all. And once I started watching, he gave me his whole collection. And one of my favorite covers was the one, I think it was for right after four. They had the boxes across the whole cover of all 14 guys, and then with the winner in the middle. And the thing was, I guess that cover was actually came out right before the show, so the winner was kind of spoiled. But it was just a cool cover where they had all 14 guys on it.
I remember that. I actually have I remember my senior year in high school, right before WrestleMania 7, they actually had they did a special, PWI did a special on the first six Manias. And it's funny now how many there are now. I mean, 27 of them. But you're like, the first six. And they had them all like these articles that PWI printed and wrote after the actual show. And they just did like a collector's item. And I remember reading the four article. And a lot of people were very up in the air. Because like you mentioned, we'll talk more about this on the next vault. Having Hogan and Andre not in the final, that kind of... I think that threw everybody off, you know, and you're exactly right. When you saw the bracket and you saw that Hogan and Andre were not going to be, you thought to yourself, oh, Hogan would be on one end and Andre be on the other end and they just meet in the middle. You thought that's easy enough. But the fact that they were going to meet in the second round, you're like, wait a minute. So that made the other 12 guys even more intriguing because one of those 12 guys was going to face Hogan or Andre in the finals, and you immediately knew, well, Hogan's going to make it, of course, because he's going to win the belt back. So you're thinking, who of the other heels were strong enough to meet in the final? Now, obviously, DiBiase was the number one choice, but you never know. You didn't know. And that's what made the drama of that tournament so special, because you just didn't know. You just didn't know. It was great. It's great, great programming and well-written. Better than the main event on Sunday. Complete 180, but we already talked about that.
Yeah, so that kind of wraps things up for this show as far as the Vintage Vault's concerned. I also just wanted to give another quick plug to our buddy Rav, who runs the Territory Wars. When you mentioned it, it kind of jogged my memory that I wanted to talk about it.
That's kind of why I said it that way.
Things are actually perking up now. We had two or three new people join, so they're up to six territories. But those new ones are just beginning. So if you want to get into something like this, now is probably a good time. Basically, what you do is you draft different competitors. Every person has their own roster of different guys. You pick whatever promotion you want, and you just it's not really like an RP thing. You're basically just booking a promotion. And you have like 1 to 2 weeks a show, two shows a week, rather. And then our buddy Derek is the judge, and he does kind of like a PWI weekly thing as well, where he kind of wraps up all the action. And the guys on there do an amazing job. So even if you're just interested in reading stuff like that, they're really cool to read. So check it out if you're interested at Bigelow34ProBoards.com.
I know Rav, he does WWF. Yeah. I think somebody's got...
Well, AWA just started. I can tell you right now, actually.
I think somebody has Ring of Honor.
I think Ring of Honor just started as well. Hang on one sec, I'll tell you. Ring of Honor just started. AWA Ring of Honor just started. Our buddy Kieran is doing Ring of Honor. AWA is our new buddy on there that's really come in with a house of fire on our board, and that's Chasines.
Oh, Chasines, yes. Yeah, good guy.
So he's a good writer. He'll be doing AWA. WCW is currently opened by Perfectly Straight Edge, another guy that's actually been with us since the board opened back in 2007. He's been with us.
Yep.
If you're looking for some kind of a sick, crazy promotion, we have XPW, and that's run by Mad Stepdad. His is really interesting, actually. He's very off the page. He's got, like, listen to some of the guys he has in his promotion. The Sheik, Berserker, Vic Grimes, Lizzie Borden, Sullivan, Damian Demento, Onita, Necro Butcher, Sabu, Terry Funk. So, you know, and then he's got Buddy Rogers as like his champion. So it's really a cool, very diverse promotion. And he
gotta feel bad for the producers on those shows. Jesus.
Well, his show is actually, he does it as like this kind of gritty feel, like almost like even more underground than ECW was. And he has three guys who run the territory, and that's Strangler Lewis, Grand Wizards, and your buddy Joseph Tootsmont. The three guys that run his promotion. So actually, I'm sorry, Bruno Sammartino is his champion, but Buddy Rogers was. So it's kind of cool because he has these guys who are like legit wrestlers, and they kind of these feuds with these bloodthirsty guys. So, he runs a really cool promotion, and then TNA is still going as well, and that is with our buddy Oz. So definitely check that out. It's really cool the way they do things, and then of course WWF is with Rav. So they things are really picking up. They just did their expansion draft for the new promotions coming in, and Rav is just amazing with these things. Not only does he run this whole thing, his promotion WWF is just amazing. The work he puts into those, if the real WWF is like a quarter is as good as what he puts on, then you'd be amazed every week because his shows are unreal. That work he puts in. So
yeah,
check it out. It's really fun reading. If you're interested in doing something like that, we're always open for new members. I know Rav is always stumping for new guys, so or even if you want to judge, we're always looking for judges too to just read the shows and grade them. So it's definitely a cool little concept, and we're always looking for new members there.
We did it for when Rav first opened up the Wars. What was it, 2 years ago? About 2 years ago. You had actually NWA. You were actually Mid-Atlantic. Mm-hmm. I was Memphis, and our friend Matt, our fellow PTB or Matt Rotella, he was actually WWF, and our another future place to be member, Johnny Reckless, he was actually doing Ring of Honor, and he had this crazy feud with, and he had a great, he was kind of like the XPW, kind of that weird combination of guys. He had like a feud going with Steamboat, Brett, and Muda. It was like really not crazy stuff. His shows were great, and it's very intensive, and we just, Justin and I at the time were writing like 9 things a week, so it was just,
yeah, we had our pay-per-view reviews. I was doing Raw, you were doing
SmackDown,
and
you were doing Nitro reviews.
Oh, that's right.
And house shows. I was doing prime times, and we were just writing. We were writing like 70% of the board at the time, and I'm very happy that, and it's good that you and I don't have to do that as much. I mean, we haven't really had a chance. I'm glad we have a few minutes here to really pump up our message board because it is the backbone of what you and I are.
Yes.
And I feel this podcast is an extension of that, and eventually. We'd love to get – we're going to have some of our fellow PTBers on there. Kieran, I'd love to talk to, the Mad Scott, but unfortunately he actually
– Well, he said during Easter break, which is coming up for him, he's going to be off school. So he said he'd be able to stay up and kind of go on with us because he is over in Scotland. So, he's obviously way ahead of us time-wise. Like right now, it would be a little bit too late for him to join us. But he said he will make that sacrifice if he can be on because I know he's itching to be on. I know that. So – We'll definitely have to have him on with us.
We might have to record like on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. Like if we start,
If he's going to do it, he's going to do it right. I want him up at 4 a.m. on this show, showing his true dedication to us.
Crazy bastard. our message board is great. Please don't hesitate to join. Please join. It's fun. It's free. Bigelow34.proboards.com. We don't just do wrestling. I know this is a wrestling themed podcast. But we talk about – I have no problem mentioning this board when we do our sports ones. The next time we have our good friend Leanne Griffin on, we talk about all sorts of stuff. We talk about TV, movies. Matt Rotella does his movie reviews. I was doing reviews about James Bond films. I got to jump back into that at some point. We're doing all sorts of stuff. We do music. We do random – Justin has his Pandora on during the day, and I usually have my Yahoo on during the day, so we put up music lists, and it's just all sorts of weird shit just to talk.
The one thing we actually haven't done in a while is we used to do quite a bit of is the drafts where we just kind of pick a random topic. And actually, yes. We recently did a tag team tournament as well. That was fun, all-time tag tournament. So we're going to have something maybe now that WrestleMania is over firing back up on that level. So, definitely check us out and join. We have our pay-per-view pick'em. Our buddy Edge on there is going to be starting baseball pick'em this Friday as well, so that'll be fun. And also now we're going to have Raw and SmackDown reviews. Edge is doing Raw, and our friend Disabled Smiley's on the board. Our buddy Matt is going to be doing SmackDown.
Oh,
so.
My God. Crazy Disabled Smiley's. He's another unstable one in a good way. So yes. I'm looking forward to reading those.
So he's going to be doing SmackDown. So things are really picking up there, actually. And I did put a little post on there kind of thanking all you guys who have joined up and really helped to rejuvenate things as this year has dawned. We have a nice little community there, and it is a lot of fun. And same goes for the Blog of Doom, guys. Check that out, RSPWFA2. Livejournal.com, another good community. They do a lot of cool things. you know, every day of the week they have something new. Monday they do a wrestler of the week where you vote over the weekend for who you thought were the top five guys. They tally those up. Tuesday, my buddy Chrononaut does classic Clash of the Champions reviews. Those are really fun to read. Wednesday is the world famous Walk Around the Web by Glennie Bunn. Basically, he just does this crazy link dump of all very interesting topics. Mm. Thursday is usually an MMA thing goes up. Friday is the Film Fiesta, and where it's just all basically film news, and then our reviews go up on Saturday. So every day is something new there, and it's always a lot of interesting characters there, as you've already met a couple of them.
Yes.
And speaking of those, we did talk to Andrew and Jordan, and both are going to be on our NBA playoff preview, which will be 2 weeks. A week from this upcoming Monday. And next week, we did confirm that we will have Graham Cawthon on to talk about his trip to Atlanta. So those are what's coming up.
Yep.
Hit us up with some feedback, facebook.com/placetobepodcast. You have our Gmail address, or you can hit us up on our board as well. So
yeah. And again, I know there's a lot of people who feel that message, you know, you get intimidated by these boards. And yes, there are some message boards where guys get a little, you know, a little out of control. They get very pushy and animated and angry. We're not that at all. We get animated. But we don't get angry.
Mm-hmm.
We love debate. Otherwise, why sit around and, you know, mutual admiration societies get boring after a while. We like debate and we like having fun, but we're fair, you know, and that's a lot of people get that from our reviews, because one thing, and I've said this before when we did the first vault for the first WrestleMania, you know, Justin and I have been watching combined for over 50 years between the two of us. And so we feel we have a good knowledge of a lot of things, but we are by no means know-it-alls. And there are some people that write who think that, you know, this is the know-all, the be-all, and don't watch this show. It sucks. Or you have to watch this show. You're an idiot. You know, look, if you want to watch The King of the Ring 1995, be my guest. If you want to hate WrestleMania 3, be my guest. Unless you're Justin and Andrew Reich, who have no right to hate it. But no, I'm just kidding. But, you know, be my guest. You know, it's fun. It's fun to debate. We're fair. We're fun. We like, you know, we goof on each other. We have a good time. I mean,
well, like The Godfather. We're just fun-loving guys that want to have fun.
Exactly. And in fact, Matt Rotella, who is slightly off kilter to begin with, put a hilarious picture
physically and mentally.
Yes, exactly. Put a picture on the board today. As everyone knows, I am not a big Jim Duggan fan by any stretch, but he's in the Hall of Fame now, so I have to accept it. So today he asks me, what other guys do you not want to see in the Hall of Fame? Well, the Bushwhackers are going to make it in, but that's fine because I have no problem with the Bushwhackers. I liked them as the sheep herders. He goes, what other guy don't you like? Well, I was never a big Ronnie Garvin fan. He goes, and then he went on this weird kick about sticking Ronnie Garvin on TV shows. So today he took the cover of a Family Ties DVD box set and put Ronnie Garvin's face over Michael J. Fox's, and he called it Garvin Ties. I mean, and every day he's going to start brand new. He's going to put new TV shows with the word Garvin in it. That's Matt for you. And you've heard him on the air here. He is a very strange human being. That's the kind of people we have on our board. Just fun, strange, goofy guys who love to have a good time.
Yeah, and definitely check it out. If you enjoy our podcast, it's more of that, basically. And if you haven't read all of our reviews, check them out, too. And you can also see them over at the historyofwwe.com, Graham's tremendous page as well. We post them there.
Graham is awesome. I'm looking forward to talking to him next week because one thing he did, he's a completist like you and I are, and he did everything in Atlanta this week. I think the only thing he didn't do was the fucking golf tournament. That's probably the only thing he didn't do.
And if you actually follow him on Facebook, History of WWE fan page on Facebook, he posted a bunch of pictures from Access, and actually on his blog too, you can access that from the main page. He has a bunch of pictures up from Access, and he has some up from WrestleMania as well, so they're pretty cool.
Yeah, I know he has a picture with Miz and A-Rai and just a lot of cool stuff, so check him out. He's good, and he'll be on next week with us. So.
Yeah, so that's what's coming up. That's where you can reach us, and also check out our show from last night if you haven't yet. That's our MLB preview and WrestleMania recap. And we will be back with you next week for the Graham Show. So for my PIC, Scotty C., I am Justin Rosero, and thank you for listening.
Peace.